on a swing. I haven't.
All right, I'd like to call us to order and ask us all to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. With that, let's take the roll call of the Planning Commission.
Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Anand.
Here.
Commissioner Smith.
Here.
Vice Chair Fuller.
Here.
Chair Maynard.
Present.
Thank you.
And with that, are there any comments for the public forum?
No, Chair Maynard.
Okay. So with that, we will close the public forum and move on to Administrative Agenda A under Item A1, Planning Commission Minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of March 13th. Are there any comments on the meeting minutes? Okay. With no comments on the meeting minutes, do I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes? Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All say aye if you support the motion.
Aye.
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 Okay. With that, I believe we pass the meeting minutes. Do we need to read that as well?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. With that, we will go to item B1. And can we read item B1?
Item B1 is a public hearing. It's a request for the ward development plan and tentative parcel map located at 749 through 759 Ward Drive, case number 15126, TMP DP AB DRB, APNs 071 170 035 and 071 170 014.
Thank you. And do we have a presentation today?
Yes. Okay. Good afternoon, Chair and Commissioners. Today we have a request for a tentative parcel map and development plan for 749/759 Ward Drive. The application includes a tentative parcel map to subdivide the existing lot into two separate lots. Proposed lot one would be approximately 2.164 gross acres and would contain the building addressed as 749 Ward Drive, and proposed lot two would be 1.253 acres and would contain the building addressed as 759 Ward. The application also includes a 10-foot right-of-way dedication along Ward Drive, which I'll go into more detail on later. The application also includes a development plan for the as-built development out there. The development plan will be for each lot to regulate the distinct development on the two proposed lots. Development plan A would regulate the development on proposed lot one, which is 749 Ward, and development plan B would regulate the development on proposed lot two, which is 759 Ward. The project will also include improvements to the site, include redesigning the project site to increase parking as well as landscaping. They would be increasing the number of parking spaces on 749 Ward from 28 spaces to 79 spaces, and the parking on 759 Ward from 25 spaces to 39 spaces for a total of 118 spaces. Landscaping will also be increased on both parcels. The existing site currently contains about 12% of landscaping across the two proposed lots. The project will increase landscaping on 749 Ward to 34% and 759 Ward to 31%. these increase in landscaping and parking will be accomplished through the removal of the existing outdoor storage areas, which will be shown in the photos coming at a later slide. The ground level outside of 749 Ward would be elevated to allow for additional truck loading, and there would be remodel of the existing buildings, including new exterior covered walkways along the project frontage. There also be some interior models to remove an existing mezzanine in 749 Ward and to remove a partial second floor in 759 Ward. So this is the project location. It is located on Ward Drive south of Hollister between Highway 217 here and Ward Drive here. It's a triangular-shaped parcel and approximately 3.4 acres. So this is the project site looking north up towards up Ward, towards the existing other industrial and office development. This would be up towards Hollister. This is looking south of the project site towards other existing office and industrial uses. This is looking to the east. There's an existing agriculture within the County of Santa Barbara jurisdiction. And then this is looking west down Highway 217, which runs along the entire property line. So this is the existing site plan. So these are the storage areas here and here that would be removed to allow for the additional parking. It's a little hard to see, but there would be a 10-foot right-of-way dedication along here to allow for parkway as well as sidewalks. There's also another project to put in bike lanes along Ward, which is currently being carried out by the Public Works Department. This 10-foot dedication, though, will allow primarily for just the sidewalks and parkway as well as curb and gutter. And looking at this site, the awnings or the covered walkways would be located along the frontage here. These would be the new walkways. The setbacks from this, which I'll go into more detail later, the center line has moved closer to the property line as well as the 10-foot dedication, which is one of the primary reasons for the modification to the front setback. This is just an aerial looking at, again, the existing site looking west at the storage areas at the rear. And looking at it from the east, again, showing the existing kind of outdoor storage. Currently, there's no real parking or anything back here. It's just kind of open paved area. And so this is the visual simulations of the proposed project. So you'll have the additional parking being provided as well as additional landscaping. In this rear corner will be a new detention basin to contain runoff from the site. Under existing conditions, the site is graded to drain to a kind of a drainage ditch which runs along Ward Drive or along Highway 217, and the runoff just sheet flows into that drainage ditch. Now, this shows kind of the existing proposed elevations for 749 Ward. This here shows the new front awning that would be going in, and this is the existing building. On the back side, this shows where the elevation would be raised to allow for the new loading door, which is here. So it'd be raised approximately 2 feet to allow for that additional loading door. And then this shows 759 Ward. This is the existing building here. And again, showing the new covered walkway, the landscaping. And this is just showing a more straight-on view of that. So going more detail on the proposed modifications, the applicant is requesting modifications for the placement of parking within the front setback area along Ward Drive for both the proposed lots, as well as the placement of parking in the side yard setback for both the proposed lots, and the placement of the two existing buildings and new patio coverage within the front setback along Ward Drive for both of the lots, and the placement of existing building on Close Lot 1 within the rear yard setback. This is the table from the staff report, which goes into more detail on the setbacks. Again, one of the reasons for this is due to the 10-foot dedication. So without that dedication from the right-of-way, Proposed Lot 2 would actually meet the setback, and Proposed Lot 1 would only be 2 feet short. When it comes to the center line, due to the width of the street, with or without the dedication, they would still need the modification. And then looking at the parking, as the existing site currently has parking within the setbacks, so if you see here, the existing lot currently has a 21-foot and zero-foot setback for parking, and these are the setbacks for the proposed lot as well. The application or the project did go before DRB and received conceptual review on October 27, 2015. The DRB found the project to be well designed. The landscape palette was generally appreciated. They did have some comments on breaking up the direct view of the buildings from 217 without completely blocking the view, and as well as asking for the planting along the frontage to be tall enough to screen cars, and they unanimously supported the setback modifications. And the project's plans before you have been revised to address those comments, and the project will be going back to DRB following approval or following decision. So there was CEQA analysis done on the project, and it was a negative declaration. The project generally required CEQA, primarily due to the cleanup taking place on site due to previous contamination. Without that cleanup, the project would have qualified for both of these exemptions, which is why the initial study generally found that there would be no significant impacts on the environment and no mitigation measures would be required. However, to further reduce any potential impacts that were found to be insignificant, there were specific project conditions of approval imposed as part of the development plans that would address cultural resources, noise, and hazards and hazardous materials. Starting with cultural resources, the conditions require on-site monitoring by approved archaeologists and Native American monitor. If anything were to be located or found on-site by the monitor or archaeologist, the project would be required to be stopped and a Phase 2 study conducted. And in the event any remains were found, the project would also be stopped and appropriate actions would be taken. For noise, the project has limited construction hours as well as it is conditioned to shield stationary equipment and limit the use of equipment on site in terms of reducing, not leaving equipment idling for extended periods of time and things along that line. And then for hazardous materials, given that the project was constructed in the 60s, there is a potential for asbestos, so prior to demolition, the applicant is required to test for any of the interior changes and soils impacted by the contamination, if located or found during grading, would be disposed of in an appropriate manner consistent with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, who's overseeing the site cleanup. And then all 16 existing wells, which are located throughout the site, would be protected in place for continued monitoring. As described in the staff report, the project does conform with the related policies general plan. and is allowed under both the general plan and zoning ordinance. The project is located within the airport approach zone, and the application will not change the project's consistency with that. There's no increase in height, and there's no proposed change in use of the buildings. And it would be consistent with the zoning ordinance with the approval of the modifications, which I described earlier. This is the standard from, or zoning standards and consistency table from the staff report, just kind of going through whether or not consistent, showing what the proposed setbacks as well as what the required setbacks are. And again, it would be consistent with the approval of the modifications. And the recommendation is to adopt the final negative declaration and approve the tentative parcel map and development plans with the associated modifications. Additionally, this project is located within the coastal zone, so the application will be required to go to the Coastal Commission for final approval. And I'm here if you have any questions.
Should we take questions and then public comment, or how does the commission want to deal with this today?
Public comment
first? Okay. So are there any public comment letters?
It looks like I'm receiving one right now, Chair Meader.
Great.
No, thank you.
Well, you have to do it by...
Fill out a sheet.
Yeah, she has one.
Yes.
Oh, it's okay. You've got some time to do it. Well, we'll go ahead and take our first person, Frank Orodondo.
I actually did have a comment letter printed and prepared. It's sitting on my printer at home. So happened I brought my... laptop.
I believe we actually all have that in front of us.
What you have actually is the original letter that I submitted for the negative declaration. I just resubmitted it to the final, and over the weekend I actually got a chance to look at the final, and I have new comments. So let me start off. 3 minutes, God, that's so quick. My name is Frank Arredondo. I'm Chumash, most likely descendant. Some of you I've actually met before, but I do cultural resource management. I review development projects for consistency and applicability to the policies that are out there. So I do oversight review. Usually archaeologists will do the surveys. I review their reports for adequacy. I have access to the information center, so I get to look at all the archaeological reports to determine whether or not they're addressing the facts. So I'm going to try to make this brief. First off, right off the bat, you have to identify whether or not there are resources in the process. In my letter, basically, I'm pointing to that we failed to identify. And what I mean by that is that the part of this report, the negative declaration, relies upon a report from the Information Center, an archive of archaeological reports. It stated that there were 22 surveys within the project parcel area and adjacent. Technically speaking, I read every single one of them. Only one was actually on the parcel. And that one was actually a floodway evaluation. They walked the parcel. There was no real survey that was done. Visibility was less than 5%. So they don't even know what was there. But what they did find was right across the street, a site material. It's being listed as locus 3. And in archaeological terms, that's what you identify as a site out in the field. It's done on a DPR form for the historical register. That is in the report E245, or if you read my report, 246. It is in there. In talking to the Information Center, they do not know why this was not listed as a site, but they acknowledge it is there. Across 217 is a locus 5. This is a pattern, site material within this area. Now, one of the things that was brought up in the final was, if it's not a site on your parcel, then we don't have to do a phase one. That's not true. That's the environmental guidelines, which is the general terms. There is a specific technical report that gets into the detail of identifying, evaluating the elements that would denote that there's a potential to impact resources by looking at the adjoining areas. That is the technical resources report. I have it right here. I'm happy to send that to you. The point is that you really should have an archaeologist do this review. An archaeologist who's going to read the reports, because the Information Center is run by students, grad students. They pulled up a bibliography list and said, here, Nobody sat through and read the reports. Why would they? They're like 400 pages long. That's what I do. An archaeologist would have read the reports, identified the certain area and logistics in the, and said, wait a minute, we don't have ground disturbance that's here. If you look at the property, the roadway on Ward Drive, it goes like this. The drive is up high in higher elevation, and then it drops down. Each parcel on the other side, they're the same. What I do believe is there's ground disturbance, but closer to the roadway, not on the rest of the parcel. Since you do not have any documented evidence of ground disturbance, in other words, back from the 1960s, the technical report of the cultural resource guidelines does say that you need to do a phase one. It is in there. I'm more than happy to share this letter with you because I'm just kind of running off the hip right now. But like I said, I left it at home. I will say this. I'm not opposed to the project. I think it's a great little project. It'll be wonderful. But what I want to stress is, whatever review that you do, you should follow these footsteps, hire an archaeologist, go in here and do the study. I'll come through and I'll review it and point these things out. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Sure. I believe we have a second public comment. Ms. Roanne Mercante?
Moranti,
sorry about that. Please come on up.
I've never done this before. I'm 58 years old. This is the first time I've ever been in this process. I live across the street from this proposed development. Oh, sorry, not that many people in here. I live across the street from this proposed development at 730 Ward Drive, which is directly across from 749. It's a house that's hard to see. It's behind a lot of tall growth. And it's a part of John Givens Farm. My husband works for him. It's basically, you know, on the farm property. And we just moved there a couple months ago. And what we've noticed is Channel Industries, which is behind these two buildings, has a very large piece of machinery that somehow it runs 24 hours a day. It's got a very deep bass thrumming sound. And the gap between these two buildings functions as a funnel for this sound and sends it directly into our house, and it also bounces off the buildings behind Equil. And so my question is, obviously this has nothing to do with Channel Industries, and you know, I might approach them and ask if they might want to put up a sound baffle, but I'm curious about this development in that I don't know if the shapes of these two buildings are changing, if the gap between them is remaining the same. I'm curious and just wanted to know about the footprint, because it's possible as those buildings change, it will mitigate this 24-hour day, 7-day a week, large, deep bass thrum that happens in our house. I mean, we live in a mixed-use area. We're not trying to get it to stop. But that's my actual question. What are those buildings going to look like when they're done? Are they in the same footprint? Are they changing? Are they moving on the property? It affects us directly in that way. So that's my question.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll have staff respond to both of the public comments afterwards. Are there any other public comment letters?
No. Chair Maynard.
Okay, wonderful.
Chair Maynard.
Well, if we have questions, we may pull you back up.
Chair Maynard, yes. if you don't mind, if we could get any site visits or ex parte communication, that would be great.
Wonderful. So we'll start on the side and go through.
Commissioner Miller, I did visit the site. Quickly drove by. It appears to be empty, so I kind of drove in around it. I had no ex parte communications.
I also visited the site and had no ex parte communications.
I relied on the photographs today, so I did not do a site visit, and I had no ex parte communications.
I have not been by the site since the application, so I never noticed it really, but except when it was released, and I haven't had any discussions with any of the applicants.
I drove by the site today and sort of passed through the property a bit. And I've had no ex parte communications with the applicant.
Thank you for that. So at this point, what I'd like to do is, I guess we'll go ahead and we'll close the public hearing. And then I'd like to give an opportunity for staff presenting on this project to respond to any comments made during the public comment.
Just starting with the second comment, the buildings will going to remain the same. They're not going to be changing the location. This is mostly just for facade improvements as well as the front awnings on the front edge. So generally the site will stay the same. There will be some additional landscaping that may help, but in regard to the buildings themselves, they will remain in the same general location.
If appropriate, could I ask, is there, since just we have a citizen who's come to this for the first time, is there any advice we can give her on addressing noise concerns from this other company? Is there a process in the city that she can follow up on regarding the other noise issue?
Thank you. There is. You can call or you can look up online. There's a City Assist hotline, or you can even just call our front desk at 961-7500, and they can connect you in. You'll get into code enforcement, and then they'll go out and check the site. So you're free to use those tools anytime you want.
Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for allowing that diversion. And then, do you have any other comments?
And then, just to the first comment, the comments that were made were similar to the comments that were provided in the letter, which were responded to in the staff report. So just kind of going through the comments that were in that letter, the concern about there not being previous development on the site. Again, the project was developed in the 1960s, so the records from the 1960s are not always complete. However, given the site with the surface grading and as well as the existing utilities, and again, the soils in there are compressionable, so you cannot actually just build on the site without grading and recompacting. Additionally, as part of the remediation activities that were taking or are taking place on site, there was continuous coring done when they put in the wells, as well as soil studies done on the soils that were found on a layered basis, and that's soil geology study from those coring samples found that up to 8 feet down were basically fill soils or disturbed soils, which are described as sandy, silty clay extending from ground surface to 8 feet below in some areas, generating signs of discontinuous lens of those different soil types. So in regard to that, it is clear that there has been substantial grading done on that. And then in regard to some of the other comments, the second one was that there were not surveys done. The letter from CCIC, who we did contact, who was mentioned by the commenter, or by Frank, did go say that there were studies done in the surrounding area. There was just the one study done on that project site, and again, nothing was found on that project site. That study, I believe, was from the 80s, so this project was already actually developed at the time. And except the CCI research did not find any actual evidence of resources on the project site itself. And again, given the amount of disturbance there, and the coring, there would have been some identification in the past. And then the third comment was in regard to the archaeological site on the adjacent parcel. We did talk to CCIC. I did follow up on emails upon receiving the applicant's letter, and they did mention that, yes, there is the Locust 3 on the adjacent site. The report did not confirm it as it being, they weren't sure quite where it came from. It wasn't conclusive, I guess would be the best way to put it, based on the research that they had, based on that report. And again, most of the areas identified in the report were greater than a quarter of a mile away. And then the fourth comment was in regard to the sacred lands request, which is done early on in the project, basically sent out to the National Native American Heritage Commission, and they do a record search through their files, and that research came back negative as well. And in addition to that, we also did send out to local tribal leaders in the area and for consultation, and no request for consultation was received. And then, again, the last comment was no evidence of fill soils on site. However, the previous studies done as part of the remediation activities on site did determine that there were significant fill soils on site. So that's our response to that.
And if I can add on to Mr. Pearson's comments and responses, I think that condition of approval that's in the negative declaration that adds additional levels of oversight during construction, including a cultural resources monitor, is that extra level of reassurance that staff went with to make sure that, as we know, sometimes there's data gaps or just information that we don't know about that what's underground. So we typically would require a cultural resource monitor on site during excavation.
Could I ask if any of the commissioners have questions, particularly on this issue of the archaeological history or cultural resources? Maybe we can keep it on that topic for a moment. I guess I have just and I'll ask a few naive questions. So what triggers a phase one archaeological assessment?
So based on our environmental guidelines, it's kind of a multiple reasons. So the first step that we take is to do kind of the literature search, which would be going through CCIC. If they determine that there was something on site, then that would be one of the reasons why we may require it. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that is if the site has been developed or is undeveloped. If the site has been developed, then typically a phase one is not required unless there has been something identified on the site, in which case there would either be a phase one or phase two or phase three mm-hmm. done. But generally speaking, if a site has been developed in the past and we can show that there has been grading and other activities that have already taken place on site, mm-hmm. a phase one would not be required.
I know there's many different tribal groups locally, so there's your most likely descendants, there's the coastal band of the Chumash and the San Ynez tribe of the Chumash as well. You said you reached out to tribal leaders. Can you clarify which tribal leaders were reached out to?
Let's see, I think so it was the San Ynez band, the Barberino / Venturino band, the coastal band, and I believe there was two others, but I see all the mm-hmm. we send out a request to the Native American Heritage Commission, and they provide us with the list that we need to notify as part of our requirements. And okay. so we notified the ones that they provided on their list.
Okay. And are most likely descendants also usually included in that list, and were they here? That might also be a question for legal if I'm not sure.
So generally, well, at least in other projects that I've had mm-hmm. in the past, the mm-hmm. MLD is determined by the Native American Heritage Commission.
Okay.
Once something has been located on site mm-hmm. Or can be done ahead of time. So at this point, there's no MLD identified for this site.
Any other questions on that topic? Okay, any other questions about the project or discussion of the project from the commission? Commissioner Smith?
Yes, I just had a few questions. So I noticed within the site there's this loading area in the back for trucks, and so I didn't know how the breaking up, dividing the parcels, would that have any impact on the ability of these large trucks to be moving within the property? I mean, if ever, I'm just thinking, you know, if there was two different people who are future owners of this site and trucks were going in and out, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So as part of the map that they're proposing, there would be a shared access as well as shared parking agreement. So essentially both property owners would be able to use the entire parking lot to navigate the site.
Okay, great. That's helpful. Thank you. And then I noticed that this this property is right by 217. And it looks like there is some proposed, trees or something in the back. Can you just describe that a little bit further about what's being proposed there?
Just along the highway itself?
Yeah.
So it's generally just going to be landscaping, and the applicant is here if they have any more detail they want to kind of add on exactly what's going to be going back there. Maybe best to have them kind of walk through that.
Please come on up.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, I'm Pete Allen, architect for the project. In response to that specifically, our first trip to DRB, we had some trees, but not a lot of trees along the 217 corridor. And we have since come back. If you can get the landscape plan up there, you'll see that we're adding a substantial amount of trees. There you go. Good. So along here, we just had spotted a few trees. We've added a lot of trees and filled in this area here where the trucks are. So we've addressed that issue.
Thank you. And is there any fencing there or any other type of barrier?
Yeah, there has to be a fence there because it's a highway.
Right.
So Caltrans, we can't touch any of their stuff.
Oh, I see.
So we will have plants, shrub massing coming up against that.
Got it. Thank you. That's helpful. And then is there any question? I know timing of these things is always a little bit up in the air, but I know there's also the pending the bicycle project. And so I didn't know if you had any input on sort of how this was all going to potentially coordinate in terms of that work and anything that's changing here on this property?
So that project is actually slated to begin May 1st, okay. And will actually be completed probably before this project takes place. Throughout the design process, the applicant and we did work with Public Works to kind of coordinate basically what was going to be taking place to make sure they did match. But that project, the bike lane improvement project, will actually be going forward mm-hmm. prior to this project and will generally be completed prior to the project.
And then my other question was about the parking setbacks. I understand sort of right, we're working with sort of an existing property, existing buildings. And I guess I was trying to get a sense sort of design-wise, sort of just, I guess, what you went through, the different pros and cons of if the parking were to comply, if they weren't modified, if that had been proposed at any point, or sort of how that lines up with the building setbacks. Are those two factors, considered together, or is it sort of an independent evaluation on your part?
So it's kind of broken out in that table. We did look at the building and the parking as kind mm-hmm. of a separate thing. Given that the project kind of had existing parking within the setback, the design of the project always generally included parking. If you notice, the parking lot here in the north corner mm-hmm. is pretty much entirely located within the setback, and this is traditionally been a parking area. It's designed a little bit differently, but did stay as parking. But there was not a design necessarily that did not have the parking, at least in that front setback area. Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I noticed was this, there's a top component on top of the building.
The equipment screen.
Oh, yes. Can you explain that just briefly?
It's just to screen any potential equipment. The application or the project doesn't include any specific tenants at this point. It's just to do improvements to the building. So the applicant anticipates that if there were rooftop equipment needed for any individual tenants, that would provide screening for that equipment, which is generally encouraged by the DRB and the city.
And does that fall with any height restrictions, including that screening, falls within the parameters? Is that screening like counted when calculating height?
Not specifically when you're talking about the building. Uh-huh. In regard to this building, they're not okay. over going to exceed the height okay. Standards of the district uh-huh. or conflict with any of the airport approach zone standards as well.
Okay. So even factoring in that, if you were even to consider that screening element, it's all within
yeah.
the parameters. Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you. Those were my questions.
I've got a couple questions about the setbacks. I'm just a little confused about exactly what it means. I think I understand, but just to clarify, if you could go back to the one you had up there, because that helps me orient my question. On the building setback, what are the factors that resulted in the diminished setback? Is one the walkway in front of the existing building that's being erected? Is that part of it?
Yes, so the covered walkway is considered to be part of the building,
okay.
So would be considered.
And is there any other reason why? Is that the whole reason for the difference in the setback?
That in addition to the 10-foot dedication. So
okay.
by dedicating the 10 feet to the city, they are actually pushing the property line back, which
okay.
is then.
And actually, I thought one nice feature of this, it appeared to me from the plan view of the existing buildings that there was parking right in front of the building, and that's
yeah.
being eliminated, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then I guess my next question is, I'm a little confused about what it actually means when, maybe go to the next slide. I guess I don't understand, well, it was the table. I don't understand what the parking setbacks are.
So it's
how that differs from the building setbacks. So could you explain that to me?
So I guess it would probably be.
Maybe the diagram would, or the plan view would help.
So if you're looking at this as the proposed site plan, if you notice that the parking spaces are actually in front of the building in this location. So the setback for parking are from the property line to the first parking space.
Okay.
Versus the setbacks for the building would be from the property line to the covered walkway, or from the center line to the covered walkway.
Okay.
And then when you're talking about the side yard setbacks, like this would be the new kind of property line. So if you notice that these parking spaces are right on that new property line, so that's where you would get the basically 0-foot setback.
But when you're talking about in front, the parking setbacks, it's really just these few parking spots on the right and then the few in the middle there.
Yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Is that all the questions that you had?
One other question.
Okay.
I'm sorry. The bio mediation activities that are ongoing on the site, if you could just explain what that is. I understand there was I don't know if it was a cleanup or just that there was some hazardous material identified some time ago and they've been working on that, but it's an ongoing process. Is that correct?
Yes. So not sure the exact timing. I think I kind of go through it in the ND. But there was AC contamination by a previous tenant out there on the site, Applied Magnetics, I believe. And there was some, basically, when they were dumping, some contamination got into the groundwater and soils. And so there was some initial remediation to remove those contaminated soils, and then the wells are basically monitoring wells to allow for monitoring of the contamination in the groundwater, which is relatively shallow on this site. And so they've done kind of some injections of chemicals to help break up the contamination in the groundwater. And so the wells basically are kind of ongoing. The last report that I saw, which I believe was from the end of last year, showed that the contamination was only found in a few wells, and it was on the decline. However, it just has not gotten to the point to where the site can be closed.
So they're monitoring the situation?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's helpful.
Vice Chair Fuller had some comments.
My first is asking for some clarification. We're on page 9 of the, I think it's the staff report, and it's under NOES. It talks about residential units located within 500 feet to the north of the site. And then on page 53, environmental checklist form and initial study negative declaration, it talks about multifamily residential units 500 feet to the south of the site. So are there some other units to the north that are within 500 feet, or are we actually talking about the same units, the Rancho Mobile Home Park, that's 500 feet to the south?
Yes, so it should be the units that are located to the south.
Okay, so yeah. There aren't any units 500 feet to the north that we're talking about?
No.
Okay, good. I just wanted to get that clarified. I'm not sure if the applicants would be interested in this, but 5 bicycle parking spaces out of 119 car spaces seems a little bit on the shy side. There's, I think, many employees that would appreciate the opportunity to have bicycle parking spaces, especially with new bikeways being built right on Ward Drive to encourage people to use bikes. Maybe 10 parking spaces, for bikes might be something that tenants and employees might appreciate more. Also, in modifications, they're sort of like looking at the overall benefits of the project versus, what we're modifying, right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, there's nothing in here about photovoltaic cells for power generation. And while that's it's been talked about at least as a interest and concern of the city to encourage alternative energy, I would think that whether it's this project or some other projects in the future where they're asking for something from us, that while we don't have any specific guidelines or requirements that they do this, that we might suggest to them that this might be a benefit that they could instigate or put into their projects. Just a thought there. That's other than that, I'm good. Thank you.
Do you have any comments, Commissioner Onan?
No.
Okay.
Could I just comment on Commissioner Fuller's raising the issue of, solar, use of solar? I totally concur with that thought. I think that's something that we should be encouraging and discussing with every project like this.
I have a couple of comments on my own or questions. So I guess I know that there's the 10-foot dedication to the city that allows for both sidewalks and bikeways, which we really need in along Ward Drive. And so in some of these setbacks, I'm seeing that 10-foot coming back. But I guess one question I've got is on the parking setbacks, for example, we go from a 50-foot requirement to a 10-foot requirement. I can understand going 50 to 40. How do we get from 50 to 10? And what's the justification for that here?
So the reasoning, kind of going back to the site plan, here's just that the parking is going to be located. It's like the first parking space is located approximately 10 feet from the right-of-way line, which would be there. Mm-hmm. Under the previous or existing site plan, the parking space is originally located within the front yard setback. So that they were just generally keeping along with the kind of existing site plan and keeping parking spaces along there.
So how much are we, I guess, required to follow that sort of grandfathering, right? So like if it was that way before, how much if we're redeveloping it, you know, do we, would it be practiced to follow that versus to sort of bring something up to compliance with the regulations?
There'd be no requirement to allow necessarily to continue, considering the amount of, they see the complete redevelopment of the site itself. Just with the design that was proposed, they kept the parking in that front yard setback and said went to design review board, and they were generally in conformance with having the parking there.
So I two other questions, I guess, that I have. So we had some great suggestions from Vice Chair Fuller around bike spaces and photovoltaics. What are our options as a commission and to be able to encourage that? So can we encourage the design review board, consider that? Is there an option to make that a condition? What are our options for supporting or encouraging that to occur?
I'm not sure in terms of making it a requirement. I know they are subject to the Green Building Code and those type of requirements, but I don't believe the city has any requirements for to require photovoltaic systems. It's encouraged, and DRB generally tries to encourage it existing or currently. So that's generally where the city is in regard to provision of photovoltaic systems.
And is that the same for bikes? I know, like, with the new zoning ordinance, we will start to have increased requirements for bike parking, but at this point, we don't have requirements for bike parking. Is that correct?
Not a set requirement. The general plan generally encourages the provision of bike parking. So, like, going through this project, the applicant was encouraged to provide bike parking, which is where the initial bike parking spaces came from. So it's an encouraged thing, but there's no fixed rule or regulation requiring bicycle parking at this point.
And there's no way we could incentivize that with some of our decision-making process. I'm just looking for our options. I'm still learning as a planning commissioner. So,
like I said, you can always encourage that, or you know, if you would like to ask for additional bike parking. I'm not sure if the applicant would be opposed to providing additional parking.
That helps me understand. I have one other question. Sorry, to go back to the archaeology for one second. So we have a letter and public comment from somebody who is a most likely descendant, but I know in your report we said we hadn't heard from the Native American community. It seems like we're hearing from the Native American community here. How does that fit into the process, right? So now that we've heard from a most likely descendant, what does that trigger for us? What's how does that change our process once we've heard back from the Native American community in that way?
So there's a difference. When we reach out as part of the AB 52 requirements, which requires consultation with the local Native American tribal elders, so as part of that, if they request consultation, then we must set up a meeting and provide consultation and take any comments or suggestions that they have. In this case, it's as a individual. And so, you know, even as an individual, given you know, the Native American community's heritage, we did go back, we did take a look. But again, given the existing site conditions and given the conditions that were already imposed on the project, and given the relatively shallow types of excavation that were being proposed as part of this project, it's essentially just a redoing of the parking lot and providing some additional landscaping. It was felt that there was no additional steps necessary. And so that's, it generally depends on what is brought to our attention. If it rises to the level of needing to require change, or if we feel that everything's been adequately addressed.
And this negative declaration still goes to Coastal Commission after this, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so they would also look at this archaeological and cultural considerations component and weigh in on given their history.
Essentially look at the whole project. I'm not sure what process that they would take. But again, everything that we approve locally goes to them and they use in making their determination.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I think that's all my clarifying questions. So maybe I can just open it up because I think we've all asked our clarifying questions at this point. So I'd like to hear a little bit from the commission about your thoughts on the project and how you think we might proceed before we get into a motion. Maybe just kind of talk through it a little bit. So where's everyone sitting on this? Vice Chair Fuller?
Yeah, I think this is an awesome project. I think it's going to be a tremendous improvement to the neighborhood architecturally, and a large increase in landscaping is only going to benefit both 217 and Ward Drive, and you know, it's a kind of a first step in redeveloping that neglected area. I think that's great. I just want to speak to the tribal considerations. There is a requirement that not only is there a Native American observer on site during grading, but there's a city-approved archaeologist that will be there during grading. So if there is anything there and it's discovered, then there will be an immediate stop to grading, and it'll allow for further investigation of the site. So I'm comfortable with the work that our staff has done in researching this. The adequacy of the people that they've contacted, or the competence of them, is, that's not our purview, unfortunately. But I think that we've put a good catch-all in there in having an archaeologist on site during grading to make sure that we do enforce the spirit of the law as well as the letter.
Okay.
I'll be happy to go if I could. So I support the project as well. I think we've been presented evidence here this evening that allows us to make all the findings that are required for this to move forward. The modifications associated with it are relatively small, and I think one we didn't talk about, isn't the existing building actually in a setback on one corner of building number 749?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, partial.
We live in a world where things don't fit into our box consistently. The parking improvement, the flow, the landscaping improvement are significant. And, those of us who've been by there, this is really going to change the look of this location and therefore lift the whole area. And hopefully all the landscaping mutes the sound a little bit for you as well coming through that corridor. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting problem. Hopefully we can help you solve that. I see nothing here that really rises to the level of setting this project back from our point of view. And also knowing that the design review board will again have opportunity to give input to the project and, with suggestions of solar and stuff. We do want to encourage solar, but we have to be wary of requiring it. The cost of construction in this area is very difficult at best of times, and it's very difficult now, and that solar may not be viable payback over the short run, but I could support bicycle parking. That should be easy enough. But overall, I see no obstacles.
Commissioner Miller, would you like to comment, or Commissioner Miller?
I support the project as well. I think overall, first of all, I'd like to thank the staff for the thorough report. I don't know that I read every word, but almost every word, and I believe notwithstanding my questions, I believe it's all there. And the issues that I think that you felt we might be concerned about and others would be concerned about were highlighted, and I think you addressed them. And I'm as to the cultural resources issue, I am also satisfied by the fact there will be two monitors on site, one from the city and one from Native Americans. So I believe it's a I like the idea about the extra, as a biker, mm-hmm. I like the idea about the extra bike spots, but I think when when I looked at the site on my visit, it's pretty unappealing. And when you look at what they expect it to look like when they're done, there's quite a stark difference, and it clearly will improve the neighborhood.
I'm also supportive of the project. I agree. The report and the information presented was very helpful, especially the way the project plans were laid out. I think that really helped us get a visual sense of what's being proposed, and that was very helpful. I have some concerns about the parking setbacks and just how that's working in, For the rest of the proposal, I am in support. It was interesting to actually drive by and around that area to see how close this property line is to the freeway, and so I was pleased to hear about some of the plantings and the trees that will serve, you know, that will help with sound and potentially safety. It must be the lawyer in me that always thinks, my goodness, what happens if a car flies off that highway? Which is very unlikely, but just it was definitely something I was mindful of when just looking at this space and how it's being used. I would concur if there is some way in final stages of the project to provide some additional bike spots, that would be fantastic. And I'm also pleased to see that there's going to be some additional landscaping throughout. So those are my general thoughts.
On my side, I am also supportive of the project. I do believe that this will improve the aesthetics of the area and will bring a new resource to our community. So I'm very excited about that. In terms of the setbacks, I agree with some of the 10-foot setbacks. I think that makes a lot of sense with the dedication to the city. I would even support some of the building setbacks that go back to 20, go from the requirement of 80 feet down to 60 or 62 feet, given that that's how the building is already structured and they're somewhat limited in what they can do with that space. One of the general things that I'm worried about is how often we do exceptions to setbacks. And so I think we have to have really good reasons whenever we're doing a setback, or every project asks for setbacks. And so I am concerned about the parking setbacks going from 50 feet to 10 feet. That's a 40-foot difference, and we're only getting 10 feet of that right-of-way to the city for the pedestrians and the bike lanes. So a 40-foot difference there, as well as significant differences in all of the other directions on the side, on the rear, and the build. You know, so we're doing quite a few setback modifications. It's not just one here. I would lean towards potentially considering two motions, a motion regarding the setbacks, and maybe considering decreasing that 40-foot difference between the requirement and the proposed here, and overall support of the project, because I would like to see this project move forward, but I'm just not sure if giving all of the just seems like quite a lot of setback. It was quite a lot of change requirements, so that's just something I want to throw out to the commission. And I think that's what I've got for today. Back and forth on that before we get to a motion.
May I ask the staff, do you know how many parking spaces are currently, you know, in the setback, the front yard setback, and how many parking spaces after, if we were to approve this plan as proposed, how many parking spaces would then be in the setback? Because I think there's quite a few of them that are currently there, and if they don't have a project, those parking spaces will stay there. So, you know, we may be gaining by actually giving the modification, but does the staff, can you enlighten us on that? Is that available information?
I don't have the exact number right now in terms of existing versus proposed parking spaces. I could think of a plan.
Can we ask the applicant if he's aware?
Just generically speaking, Joe, if you can go back to the existing plan. So right now, on the right side over here, mm-hmm. that's all in the setback now. All this here is in the setback. That's in the setback. So then go to the next shot. We've reduced that substantially here, added all this. This is all landscaping now. This is landscaping all the way in front of the building. This is actually one of our retention basins. And this is another one of our retention basins. So we have, without counting the number, we certainly reduced the amount of paving, you know, and therefore the amount of parking in that front yard setback that faces the street.
I asked one follow-up question to you. Yep.
Sure.
So then when this plan was originally proposed, were those setback requirements not there, or was that parking added between when this project was originally proposed and what it is today?
Not quite following.
1960?
In 1960, I had no idea what there was. Okay. But obviously, you could park in front of a building, and, yeah. you know, I mean, it did comply with the laws at the time. So okay. I think we're making a pretty substantial improvement.
Okay, thank you very much.
So if I could, Madam Chair, is make a motion. I appreciate your concern on the setbacks, and perhaps we have a motion. That issue is addressed, but I would like to make a motion that we accept staff's recommendation, which is adopting the development plans, the MND, the lot line, as recommended by staff, without making an adjustment for trying to change the modifications.
Is there a second?
Second.
How do you vote, Commissioner Miller?
Well, we have a discussion, right?
Oh, discussion sorry, before? Discussion after the second. Sorry, I'm still learning as chair, so we'll now have a discussion of that motion.
Call for the motion.
Okay. Oh, I think, do we have a comment?
I would feel more comfortable if we propose some sort of adjustment to the parking setbacks. So I don't know if we could amend the proposed motion.
Well, we can vote on the motion. Did we have a second?
We did have a second. So just for a quick clarification of the process, once there's a second, my understanding is we cannot amend the motion. So we can discuss it. We can then vote on it. If the motion does not pass, then a new motion can be made, which would do what you were proposing, Commissioner Smith.
But I think we can ask what alternative you would suggest. As you know, like for parking here, what would you rather see? We have the plan as it's proposed up there right now.
Mm-hmm.
How many parking spaces would you want to move them back to completely to the current building site, beyond the building site? Just take off one, you know, space back.
It is effective use of space, and I think that's probably part of the applicant's motivation. In other words, to say we're improving the front, we're reducing the amount of parking, but those front, especially in the front where the main entryway is, that'll just be unused space if it's not mm-hmm. utilized for parking.
Mm-hmm.
So should you need that premium, it's available. That's why I thought it was acceptable. Mm-hmm. And it still doesn't, I don't think, impact the entryway to that project.
My concern was actually a little bit more with the side in the rear, which might be slightly different from Commissioner Maynard's concern. So I would be.
So in the side and rear specifically, what? Because we are, you know, because of the lot line adjustment, there's zero setback for parking along that because of a new yeah. lot line, but yet it's a shared parking. That seems logical.
Oh, right.
The rear part facing 217, is that a concern for you?
Yes.
That it's too close to 217?
Yes, I think I would just be more comfortable with front, the setback there as
how much
per
is
code.
That setback? Is that setback?
Side. Where's front?
Oh, wait.
Yeah,
along the rear, front. They're actually so not encroaching into the setback, at least from. Not on the 249. So along here, they're actually outside of the setback.
Yeah, okay,
so
good.
So it goes from 10 to. Yeah.
So that setback's within tolerance. Then is it the internal one where we have the new lot line?
Yeah, so where they're creating the new lot line, which right. Runs along here, mm-hmm. This is where. They're at that zero setback.
Because a lot line represents a side yard or whatever.
Yes.
So therefore, there has to be a setback.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you clarify, just go through one more time, just so we're all talking about the same thing, the front, rear, and side. Let's do that one more time.
So for the side, it's a little strange, but this is the front for both of the two proposed parcels. And so this is lot one here and lot two here.
Yeah.
So this would be the front. There's not really a side necessarily here, just because you end up with the kind of a triangle here. So then this is the rear yard, which runs along here. And then the side is the one that runs between these two here. Okay. And then for this property, same thing. We have the side running along here, the frontage, and then the other side here.
So just to clarify, for the whole triangle on the rear lot line and the far south lot line, those parking spaces are not in the setback?
For this one, no. For this one, there are parking spaces.
There are parking spaces.
Kind of like parallel parking spaces along this side.
I see. Here. So those would be in the setback. Okay.
Yes.
So then the... So you showed us the center line, then the right-of-way front setback?
Yeah, so there's kind of two setback requirements for the MRP zone, mm-hmm. and it's 80 feet from the center line as well as 50 feet from the right-of-way line. Mm-hmm. So the way that this site is, and given the width of the street, if we go back to... this here, the street width is relatively narrow. Mm-hmm. So even if, for example, if we didn't mm-hmm. have the 10-foot dedication, the project mm-hmm. would almost meet the building setbacks in terms of the 10 feet, mm-hmm. but they would still be 10 feet short on the center line, just because the center line is 80 feet from the center line, essentially.
And I guess I just wanted to double check on on this lower part where it's at 50 versus 10. Can you show us where that is on the map?
50 versus.
Yeah, so it's like 50 feet is a requirement for the right-of-way front setback, and then 10 is what it is in the plans. So can you show us where that appears on the plans?
Yeah, it's right at the front entrance.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
Just
everyone's talking about the same thing.
So, yeah.
And it's right, that's
so we're talking here and here.
You're right, both spots.
Okay, so here and here is where that appears. Yeah. Okay. And that's also where existing parking is in both of those.
Mm-hmm. The site is over, or as proposed, is overparked.
More than required.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So as to the front parking, it looks like if it complied with the setback, you would lose, for the parking, you would lose maybe 9 parking spots there. Is that kind of roughly?
Potentially.
I see 3.
Essentially, this parking lot would be removed.
Maybe 4 over there, and then and 3 and 3 there, maybe.
To get back all the way to 50 feet, it's 40 feet additional, so that's got to be at least 4 on each side in the front end.
Well, I'm just going by those lines on there. Maybe those lines are not representative.
If they were to remove it from the parking or remove it from the setback, they would essentially lose this parking space over here because there's only one parking space that's essentially outside of the setbacks. And over here, they would lose about 4 on each side.
Yeah.
4 or 5.
Looks like we have a comment from the applicant.
If I could just add for you guys, as Joe said, technically here, we can't put anything if you want to stay technically within the parking regulations. But this... Mm-hmm. parking lot is critical for us. That's the main entrance to the building right there. The massing of the building, this is the offices in this little corner. It's a lower piece. This is the larger, taller bay, industrial R&D, whatever type of space. So having parking at this front entrance for us is critical. And we used to have parking all the way like that. Mm. So we've, you know, compromised. In addition, we have the freeways on this side of it. There's nothing on this side of it. We're not impacting any neighbors, you know, with that parking. If anything, we're actually adding more of a landscape buffer. So that was all done intentionally, balancing this whole thing. And the same with this. That's the main entrance to the building. So you're going to want parking. Mm-hmm. And your accessible parking as close as possible.
I am, so just speaking for myself for a moment, I'm feeling better about the setback modifications with the focus on that this is existing parking in both of the key locations where the biggest setbacks that I was most concerned about are. So there's a component here where there's a little bit of a design of the building that was already there. It's different than maybe if this was a new construction. And I also honor the comment just made that the original building design was set with the main entrance being on the lower right-hand corner here. Existing building, you can't change where the main entrance is at this point in time. If it was a new construction project, I'd push harder to not do that. But it's an existing building that is where the main entrance is, so that makes more sense to me. So I have less concerns with the setback given the conversation we just had, but would like to open back up to maybe we have a...
I would share, number one, I share the concerns about making exceptions to setbacks. We had that issue come up at our last meeting, and I think it's important that we be consistent and try to follow what the rules are, what the guidelines are, what the general plan wants us to do, what the zoning code specifies. However, I am okay with this project because I think the point that all of that parking was eliminated from the front really improves it. And really, if you think about the purpose for a setback, even with those few parking spaces in the narrowed setback for the building, it actually, I think, is going to have a more open feeling than it does now. So for that reason, I can accept the project as is, even though I do have concerns about making these exceptions on setback.
Okay. Going back to Commissioner Smith, I know you had raised some concerns before. Do you want to follow up on anything?
Maybe the only other question I had was regarding the parking in the rear of the 759, so proposed lot 2, right? So there's so that parking there is it, does that impact any? Is there a modification there that's being adjusted on that side?
In regard, so it's staying outside of that side yard setback there, and then there's no, the property line is over here, so there's no setback requirement, or it's not encroaching in any setbacks. Also, as part of the, we took a look at basically design and ensuring that the exiting of these cars wouldn't impact with this loading space as well. So,
if I could just comment real quick for you, there is parking right here in the setback. So and I think that's what you were asking originally. It is tandem, not tandem. Parallel. Thanks, Ed.
Is there an entrance to the building on that side? Why is that additional
right
parking over there?
Yeah. No, there's no entrance to the building here. The bays are in the back. The front entrances are in the front.
Additional comments?
I don't have any additional questions or comments.
Okay. Okay. And that side that has the additional parking that we were just talking about, that's the side, does that have neighbors on that side?
Yes.
There's neighbors. Who's the neighbor on that side?
This is the additional, or the other industrial development to the south.
Okay.
It's all, there it is. Yeah. It's okay. All parking along the side of the building and the driveway. So we're not impacting a building in that area. Our new parking is kind of from here to here.
Okay.
So that's actually in front of that building. Can you adjacent.
Okay. I know there was a comment that the location is somewhat overparked currently. Are you expecting that there would be some use that would need that much parking in the future?
We really don't know, to be honest with you, but okay. We have to make these buildings marketable, and we need to get a certain parking percentage in there to get tenants. Mm-hmm. So we're always pushing to get, you know, whatever parking we can.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. So at this point, are we ready for a vote, or are there any other comments from the commission? I'll take comments before vote. Okay. It sounds like no additional comments. We have a first and a second. So Commissioner Miller, how do you vote?
I vote yes.
Okay. Commissioner Smith?
I'll vote no, but my only objection is the parking on this side, but I'll vote no.
I will vote yes to support it. Should we vote again, even though you first and second? Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Please, Vice Chair.
I vote in favor.
Okay.
And I vote in favor.
Okay. With that, I believe it passes with a 4-1. Okay. With this, I believe we go to the director's report.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. At the dais, you have two mitigated negative declarations. One is for the Elwood Battery Storage Project, which is located on Las Armas in Western Goleta. And then the other one is for 130-132 Robin Hill Road, which are some site improvements that are evaluated in environmental documents. So those are out for public release, and you'll be considering those projects at a future date. Also wanted to just send out a reminder about the upcoming ethics training that will be here at City Hall on Thursday, 5:30 to 7:30. The clerk said that she had heard back from everyone, so that's great. There will be pizza, salad, and sodas, so you have dinner. Let's see. And just in case you didn't know, but the training is for all of our elected officials and appointed commissions and board members. So Parks and Rec Commission, Tree Commission, they'll be there too, along with City Council. And then just a reminder that Friday, May 12th, is the Coastal Housing Coalition sponsored fourth annual Santa Barbara Housing Conference. Very helpful. I think there's a couple commissioners that will be attending that we know of. So just wanted to make sure that everybody knew about that.
May 12th?
That's May 12th, a Friday. City staff will be attending, too. I'll be attending. It's been it's the fourth one. They've been very helpful.
I had it down as the 19th, so I must have it wrong.
Oh, it's a Friday. I could have written it down wrong.
I think I remembered it as the 19th as well, actually, so I'm glad you were asking.
It is the 19th.
Okay. Yeah.
He's got the flyer right there. All right, sorry about that. Thanks for flagging that. And then on April 17th, the City Council had a special council meeting. It was on a Monday evening. And one of the items that they considered was the zoning ordinance process and schedule. So if you haven't looked at that staff report, you might want to take a look at it, but you might want to, more importantly, listen to the conversation on Granicus on our website. It was a good discussion with the City Council. It's the first time that the City Council has really given us instruction about the timing of moving the project forward. So what was proposed in the staff report was very similar to what they approved, but they just extended it out. So we'll be releasing the draft zoning ordinance, including an underlined strike through from the previous draft. that was the planning considered conducted a page turn on. And then we will also be issuing some information to go along with it to help kind of guide the user. There'll also be information about where the changes were made in the text in response to public comment. But I think most important is we'll be releasing the draft along with some key issues, which will be like one-page sheets that we'll use at public workshops that compare what we're proposing in this public hearing draft with the existing zoning. So not the big 11 by 17 tables that have already been released when we kind of started off on this process, but will be really relevant information like parking and setbacks, saying this is what it would look like if you had a project now and under the existing regulations, and this is what it would look like under the proposed. So some of these key issues that we typically discuss that have more relevance to our public. So we will be doing some design, some drawings, so that you can visually see how that's represented. And then we will be workshopping that. So release in August with all of this material, and then we'll start some public outreach, doing open houses so that we can kind of quick, so that in case people get intimidated by the large volume of information, we want to be there to help walk people through it. So we'll be doing a series of outreach, including one-on-ones, meeting with you and your council person that appointed you, so that we have those. We'll be doing other meetings with the City Council Ordinance Subcommittee or Standing Committee, and then various other outreach efforts, and then we will get to hearings. But we're going to wait for the hearings till after the end of the year. So we have a little bit of a break to make sure we can involve as many people as possible in the process. So the next step will be hearings before the Planning Commission. That's you. And that will be in early 2018. And then City Council right after will bring your recommendation to Council. So that's the plan that was discussed with the City Council. And they also, in the motion to forward the item, they added in some flexibility so that we can modify as needed throughout the process, just to make sure that we're fully engaging with our public. Let's see, what else do we have?
Can I ask a follow-up question to that?
Yes.
So then would we as Planning Commission then go section by section through that again, or are we doing larger sections at a time? How what's the process on our side once we get the zoning ordinance in early 2018?
You'll see the environmental document mm-hmm. along with the zoning ordinance that will have been modified based on mm-hmm. public input. Mm-hmm. And then we will be basically taking you through the bigger issues mm-hmm. that were maybe changed or discussed to kind of guide you through. And I would say that's where the flexibility from council's direction will be helpful, because we do have some new commissioners mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that you have time during the public outreach process to really get familiar with the draft zoning ordinance. Mm-hmm. So that way we'll get a better handle on, you know, what we need to bring to you in early 2018. But we think that we'll be able to get there pretty swiftly, since we did get a lot of Planning Commission comment that benefited the draft that we're preparing right now.
I just know one of the concerns that came up the last time we did was how many chapters we did in one night and how diverse the topics were. So for our public, it's a lot to get through in a short period of time. So yeah. I hope we can not take the entire zoning ordinance in just a few meetings, but as we're actually voting on it, have a little bit more time.
Yes.
Okay. Please continue.
Okay. So May 8th is the next scheduled Planning Commission meeting. And we're not sure if we're going to need that meeting, so we'll leave that to be determined. So you'll get an email from us in the next probably few days about whether or not we need May 8th.
I will not be here if we have a meeting on May 8th. Yeah.
But we will have items for you on May 22nd. So that's a given. May 8th is probably unlikely, but May 22nd is will be full. And that's it for the
Do we know what's on that agenda?
I can tell you one item mm-hmm. that's required under state law, and that's mm-hmm. the capital improvement program consistency with the general plan that's required before the city council can take action on our budget. So we will, as in previous years, go through the capital improvement projects and how they meet general plan requirements.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions for the director? No? Okay. We'll take it to Planning Commission comments. Any Planning Commission comments?
None.
Okay. I would like to see if we would like to adjourn. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I'll second.
All right. I'll say aye if you support adjourning.
Aye.
We adjourn.